Hello, grandkids, and welcome to the not-so-historic 70th episode of OPA. This is Kevin DeFrango. To my immediate right is Ken Phillips. Sir, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, it's the 70s of our show's episodes. I'm doing good. You know, I don't know if you should really be looking down on hitting the big 7-0 here. We were both born in the 70s. I feel like that has to be at least something to look forward to about this particular decade of episodes.
And I am kind of jazzed that we very well may stay ahead of We Watch Stuff. That was getting perilously close, which I was not enjoying. We had had some rocky times here the last few months, but that's okay. Back-to-back episodes, I might actually get this posted next week, just like I posted last week's show today.
Well, you know, sometimes we're a little bit, I think, ahead of the ahead of our time, you know? So probably giving everybody that extra week to sort of catch up might help us out a little bit, you know? Kind of helps our reach. People are more primed to receive this sort of information, given that week time, that week lead that we kind of give people.
Well, I was very happy. I did jam in both of the videos that we watched. I'm trying to make sure that the links are out there a little bit more. And I think when we had done multiple videos, I only put one in there. And I did love that the Mean Muggin' mugshots was the... because you need a picture to feature when you post it on the website.
Right.
And you can't use the video picture. So I always go... I went with the women that were arrested at the Bellevue McDonald's.
Yes, I did happen to see that.
And I rather enjoyed that. trying to be a little more interactive, hopefully a little more feedback by kind of getting things out there a little more
responsive, you say?
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. We'll see what happens.
That's a noble goal, Kevin. I cannot fault you for that. But, you know, sometimes people do get fault over things. Like parking in the wrong area, Kevin.
Yes. This can be a pain in the ass. I have gotten several parking tickets myself. I do believe that more of my violations have come in the moving vehicle situation. I will admit.
You're more likely to commit a moving violation, is what you're saying, as opposed to a typical parking type ticket?
Yeah. I do recall one, though, in particular when I was at Kent, that I got out of because the person writing down my license plate wrote it down incorrectly.
Oh.
And I'm like, my license plate is this. This says this on the on the ticket. This isn't my car. And I won. I fought the system.
And, just like that.
And I won. And now...
Did you have to represent yourself for that process?
I did have to represent myself for that process.
That was the bad old days, huh?
That was the old days, yes. As you alluded to, having a 70s birthday, it was kind of the old days. You did not get a chatbot lawyer.
What?
It's just like one of those things. I'm like, can I even fathom coming up with something like this? Because I've seen a couple of young inventors here recently really hit things off. And this young gentleman is 21 years old.
Right, and I think he might
have... 19 years old, I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah, I remember his age being 19 at one point. I know that's when he started, but I think he might have even started with this kind of project earlier.
Yeah, it's been 21 months that the project has been going on.
Yeah, that's almost 2 years. So he could have been.
He just started some team when he was 17.
17, yeah. So we should say, I think we've alluded to this, being a chatbot lawyer, as they say. Now, I guess, you know, as LegalZoom would have you, would remind us that this chatbot is not a lawyer, cannot give you legal advice, but it is able to sort of walk you through
the process
of, you know, contesting your ticket and finding out if you are eligible to contest your ticket and kind of the different, I guess, things that are on the books that the, like you said, maybe your license plate is wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the sign was not clearly marked or, you know, it was confusing in some way.
Yeah, it was obscured, confusing. 'Cause they have had 250,000 cases.
And people using this service.
Yeah, people using the service. And 160,000 people have won their case. So it was a 64% appeal rate. And it saved en masse $4 million.
Yeah.
In ticket monies.
Oh, well, yeah. And I'm sure that the city or whatever is loving that, that they are missing out on all this parking ticket money.
Well, and it's kind of funny that he goes, well, they're just doing this for extra revenue. Right. Like, that was kind of one of his purposes. Well, and it was his purpose because he himself had to, he received 30 parking tickets.
That was his inspiration. And it was like a period of, I don't know, well, I don't know if they say, but he received 30 parking tickets. And so let's say he's 17.
At the age of 18.
So he's only been driving for maybe 2 years. So I don't know what the laws are actually over there, but I'll guess it's about the same. So
yeah.
He got 30 parking tickets within 2 years. That's pretty good. I don't even think I pulled that one off. But he was able to, I guess, learn from his experience of... And I'm sure, you know, this might have been why he came up with this idea, Kevin, and not you. Just because he, you know...
Had this many.
Yeah, yeah. He was very familiar with, I think, the process of contesting a parking ticket.
Yeah, and he did go a little bit above and beyond the Call of Duty in collecting parking tickets.
I think it would start to seem a little bit like clockwork and something that you could, you know... Very easily imagine programming it if you were, you know,
so inclined.
Yes. So that part made sense to me, and I think it's a really cool idea. Like, especially because you know he's putting it out there for free, so like people who would not be able to have access to a lawyer who are expensive, you know,
right.
This is like a free thing for them to be able to do. And it sounded like he was trying to expand it into other areas. Such as like employer disputes, I think, was one thing he was looking at.
Flight delay compensation.
Flight delay compensation.
Which I will attest was a little bit of a pain in the ass also. Because of my recent, I believe I told this on OPA, one of the previous episodes, when the control tower fan had caught fire in the men's restroom. Oh. So it caused delays at Chicago. And I had to drive from Chicago back here because they said all the flights for the next day were completely booked back to Columbus.
So that's like a 6-hour drive?
Yes.
And it probably would have been more like, I don't know, an hour or a couple hours from Chicago to Columbus, if you were going to fly there?
Oh, yeah, maybe an hour.
Yeah.
Something in that area.
Yeah. Well, that's a bummer, man.
So yeah, but I had to I had to go to the airline to get some compensation because I had to stay the night in Chicago because I didn't get there until like 11 p.m. at night.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Like I had to get accommodation, I had to get a rental car.
Right.
And food. Like, this was all stuff that I shouldn't have needed to pay for.
And you would think that the airline would have insurance or whatever to cover their, this incident, this whatever, fire that they had.
Right.
So I would say that they would be able to pass that along to you, since you had to endure your indignities and
in
Chicago.
I definitely know more than a handful of people that have experienced, you know, similar things too. So I mean, I could see it being useful because again, like, there's only so much you need to do. You just need to collect X amount of data and then send it. Because I mean, you still are doing a little bit of work yourself. Like you said, it only walks you through the process. You do still have to complete this yourself.
That's true. So I don't know what kind of... I guess that would have been cool to try to walk through it. Well, who knows? Oh. Maybe we could do it sometime. But I'm not sure like how advanced the... It says it's a chatbot, which... you know, I'm not sure if this thing has access to like actually send messages to...
the court?
To whatever court it would need to, you know, to, like, even go so far as to help out with that sort of thing.
Gotcha.
But that would be pretty sweet.
Yeah, it
so
would
that's,
be.
You know, that's a free idea, I'm sure. You can have that.
Add that to his list of inventions.
Yeah, those kind of ideas are so, you know, worth... They're like, worth gold. They're weight in gold.
we should be giving him advice like that.
Yes, and he should be listening for sure. These are two things that we know beyond a doubt.
Yep. This millionaire to be should really be listening to us.
But, the other thing that was, I think, also interesting is that he was going to sort of work, or at least he said, he wanted to work on a developer platform that so people could make their own programs or chatbots like this dealing with legal issues, but they wouldn't have to know how to program. Like, they could just sort of input all the information somehow.
Uh-huh.
And maybe structure the questions in such a way. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're familiar with the process, you could probably, you know, sit down with your list of questions and have some type of easy...
If it's this, then, you know, do this. Otherwise, you know, do that. Or depending on where the person lives, you know, depending on where, you know, I don't know, you could pull other information from, you know, find, like, where the courthouse is that you have to go to or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. I guess that would be kind of the other interesting thing to see what all information, you know, this chatbot in particular has to give out. Like, I mean...
Right. That makes a difference.
Yeah.
Do you remember, I don't know if you remember, when we would play in my parents' basement on the color computer, we would play different, you know, video games and things on there.
Right.
There was one game that, well, not really a game, but it was like a very early chatbot, I guess, that was called Eliza, or Eliza, maybe. And I think it's based on this other program called Lisa. But you could, like, it was supposedly a therapist, and you could, like, type in things to it, and it would come back to you with other things, like responses. And... It actually wasn't that bad. I mean,
I do not remember that. I am sure I used the system in question. This in particular, I do not remember.
Yeah, it just strikes me, you know, it's interesting that things have, you know, progressed since then, I guess. That was just a kind of a weird experience. But now to think that there could be something out there that can actually sort of like... be an agent to help people but do this working in the same kind of way. I don't know. It's pretty wild, man.
Yeah, I mean, and you just do have to wonder, because he is just in London and New York and was looking to expand to Seattle. It would be interesting to see what the, I mean, these cities would have to make at least some changes, I would think, to improve the situation so that they can indeed get more parking ticket money.
Right. And or I guess, like improve their signage or what have you, if there are things that are kind of generally, you know, wrong. I mean, this could be a good way to kind of make the cities, I think the author in here, or the programmer, and we should probably remember, mention his name at some point.
Joshua Browder.
Joshua Browder had said that...
Because he's from London, which is where he got the tickets. But he is a student at Stanford currently.
And he started with the service in London, but I think it has expanded now.
Yeah, it started in London, went to New York, and they're looking to get into Seattle. So, I mean, it's he's hitting the big markets and then probably going to work its way down. I mean, I would imagine it'd be useful in Columbus.
Right. Yeah, you know, Kevin, we didn't really talk about it, but recently Columbus won the Smart City Challenge from the Transportation Department.
Yes.
So... it sounds like they're going to be doing some kind of interesting things around here to try to improve the transportation infrastructure, including some self-driving cars. So,
You know what? I had been meaning to read more on that. I had actually saved a couple articles, but I have not gotten around to them to see what that was all about.
Yeah, apparently they said they're going to be using self-driving cars to provide transportation to and from Easton, so I don't know how that would exactly work.
Gotcha.
Or from where, what's the range, you know. But, you know, right. It sounds like we have a good shot at trying out self-driving cars sometime in the coming year or two. So
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. We will stay tuned for further developments.
I mean, I am I'm ready. I think I've mentioned already that I am all ready for that. Those people are crazy. Oh, because that was another funny headline that I didn't get to read today. But it was like the data is in, Columbus drivers are the worst or something like that.
Oh, really? That's funny.
And yeah, I would have to say there is definitely some bad driving. Although I've got to admit, I still think it was worse in Dallas just because the roads were worse.
Yeah, that makes a difference. I don't know. I'd have to take a look at that article to see what kind of
what
criteria
data
they're using. Yes. What kind of p-hacking they're doing to come up with these results. You know, how are they changing their assumptions to present their data?
You know. It's all very subjective, in my opinion, what bad driving is.
Right.
I'm not sure how you quantify that, unless you do just count by tickets, which doesn't, by moving violation, I suppose.
I was thinking you could do, like, by accidents.
Oh, you could do by accidents.
So, I don't know. I mean, I guess it... it reminds me, because I did share an article about this the other day on Facebook, but I have to admit I didn't read the actual article itself, Kevin.
Are you serious, Clark?
No, I'm not serious. I just felt like that would be a good transition. It would be great if it was true.
Yeah, it's kind of funny just because. Well, like I did mention, I've been trying to tweet these articles more. And we do, in fact, read everything that we talk about.
That's true. It helps.
But there is a study that says that basically, because they found it was 59% of the people retweeting or sharing a link on social media did not read the article in question, and they just, you know, sent it into orbit. And yes. They said it was skewing the data as to what is important.
Yeah, so I guess if you are someone out there who is reading these articles that Kevin is retweeting, you know, you're among the 4 out of 10 people. You're in the minority.
You're in the welcome to the minority.
But you know, I guess that's actually, it could be a lot worse, really. I mean, it's over half the people, a solid majority for sure.
And that is what makes it bad, is that it is a solid majority that is that are not reading the article.
That's true.
I mean, it's not an overwhelming majority, but I mean, I it would be a landslide in most situations. 20% is a pretty decent gap.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's so much like pushback against like people like not focusing and paying attention to things these days, and like nobody, you know, it makes sense that nobody would be reading, you know, links, I guess.
Oh, well, but, yeah, it kind of fits the culture.
So I guess it depends on like what your ideas about people were in general, whether this is a surprising fact to you or not.
I don't know why when I read this, because I kind of went along with the tone of the article, but now that you present it that way, it's just like, yeah, I suppose I am not really surprised that this is happening.
I think there, I mean, I guess the equivalent would be, like, because I guess I'm one of the 4 out of 10, because I can't really say that I would tweet an article that I read or that I saw without reading, just if nothing else, in case there's something really stupid in there that, you know, makes me look like an idiot, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I really have to be into it to want to retweet it anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and read it. It's just kind of the way it is, like, but I...
There's been a time or two, though, that, like, I've been reading, I see an article, and I'm like, oh, I gotta share this on OPA with Kevin, because I know it's gonna be a good topic.
It's gonna be gold, man.
But then I'm like, well, wait a minute, let's slow down here. Maybe I should actually read this thing first. So yeah, that's been valuable, because sometimes I could... Oh, God. Yeah, there was one recently where it was like, somebody was arrested for selling tickets to heaven in Florida. They were made out of gold, but then they were like on... They said they were made out of gold, but then the tickets were not made out of gold.
Oh.
Yeah, and then they were also like on meth and...
Oh!
Jesus told them that they could sell these tickets.
Yeah, I do remember looking at this article, actually.
And this was one that I saw the headline for, and I forget what it was, but it somehow combined all this, like, meth smoking, Jesus freak, selling tickets to heaven, and then there was another element, too, like they slapped somebody or something like that. So they... The article seemed like pure gold, right? I mean, who could deny this? It covers all the quadrants. It's a full court play. But it turned out, after, you know, I actually doubted it and did a little research. It was total BS. That actually was not a true thing. Somebody made that up.
Somebody made what up?
That article up.
Oh, the 6 in 10 link?
No, the one about the people in Florida selling the tickets to heaven.
Oh. Smoking meth. Oh, someone made that up.
Yeah, that was a hoax.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, okay, you know what? That's, I guess the moral there is, it pays to be a 40 percenter. Is that right? Oh, no, I think Mitt Romney took that one. I don't know. I'll come up with a different one. You know, I'm just
you're just riffing here.
Yeah. Don't. This is not written in stone. It's all negotiable.
Oh man. So, well, I'm glad that it's all negotiable.
That's
there.
Right. Yeah, no. I'm open to suggestions, Kevin. You don't have to worry about me being a tyrant.
There was a new suggestion from the Salk Institute that perhaps maybe cannabinoid may remove plaque-forming Alzheimer's proteins from the brain cells.
Yeah, I did see that article as well, and I think it's pretty ironic, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting since you're supposed to lose your memory with pot.
Right. This would actually make a lot more sense, I think, in that Alanis Morissette song than some of those verses that actually weren't ironic. The interesting thing here is that I think we're starting to see like more studies, it seems like, or at least some studies being done in terms of like the medical use of marijuana. Like these types of studies have always been hard to do because it's been an illegal substance for so long. Schedule I, you know, on the federal narcotics list, that, it seems like this is not the first study we've done. We've showcased here in recent times.
Us?
Yeah.
No.
Well, I'm just saying, like, we even if we had, you know, such proclivities, we would not be able to have shared such studies because they were not being done, I think, until fairly recently. So that's pretty cool that they were able to find out that I guess the action was that the cannabinoid molecules are taking these taking away this inflammation that couldn't happen in the neurons by taking away some other kind of particle or something.
They affect both the inflammation and there's an accumulation of an amyloid beta in the nerve cell that helps slow it down.
Right.
And it prevents that from accumulating on the brain cells. So yeah, it's kind of a double protector in that department.
Yeah, well that's pretty neat that people were actually allowed to conduct a study like this to be able to find out something.
It is like that was the other thing that they were kind of pushing in this article is that it is a very early study. Mm-hmm. and that was kind of interesting that the brain cell was created in a lab.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and I'm trying to find the exact part here.
So they can like grow.
Oh, neurons grown in a laboratory.
All right.
Which is just that's still kind of wild to me.
Yeah, I wonder if they start with like a kind of seed neuron and are able to sort of get it to produce more neurons or something?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that would just be fascinating to know about, too.
Yeah, that was kind of like the part that they sort of just brushed aside quickly, I guess, in the article. But it was done by the Salk Institute, it looked like, and I know that they've been around for a while at least, so...
Well, like I said, it's kind of early. They're not saying that there's...
I guess I'm just saying it's not like some, like, pro-weed hippie organization.
For sure it is not. It is a prestigious scientific college. It's pretty interesting that they're the ones that would be carrying out the research. Mm-hmm. That does help back up other positives of this such substance. And I think, I don't know if I mentioned, but I know that I got this one. Joe Rogan was the one that sent this one out originally when I saw it. Oh, yes.
I did see that tweet you sent.
Have to give credit for that one. Also, obviously a pro pot.
Joe Rogan's pro pot?
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, brain cells, Kevin.
Yep.
They are inside of us. Or are they us? Or are they part of us? I mean, they say that you lose millions of cells every second.
250 million?
I think it was something around 1 to 3 million every second. So that's, over time, you know, I think with every 7 years-ish, you will have, like, gone through all the cells in your body and have all brand new cells. But are you still the same person?
You're at least a little bit different. It was pretty wild. Well, I do remember hearing before that all of your cells change over a 7-year period.
Right.
Because I always remember hearing also that your palate changes every 7 years.
I'd heard that too, yes.
But that would make sense that it if all of your cells change, that means the cells in your tongue have changed over that time period. So it would make sense.
And it's also interesting that your cells' individual DNA can change over time. We're referring to, really, I guess, the companion video to the video that we talked about last week.
So this was, it was a cool, because they,
it's another mind-blowing one. Boom.
Yeah, it's always kind of interesting, I guess, just because I didn't get into biology much. It was never a strong suit or something that I liked all that much. But it is wild to, these videos do a really good job of kind of breaking it down to like a basics level.
A, executive summary, if you will.
Is that what they call it?
I don't know. I'm gonna call it that. I'm calling you an executive, and you deserve a summary, Kevin.
Well, and it's not really just all these videos, I think, are better than a summary, but just because, I mean, they're really, I do really enjoy watching them, because I know that you've used other stuff from this site or from this company, I guess, that kind of produces these science videos.
This week's was Kazurgastad, I think they were called. But that, and now they're also called In a Nutshell. I think they're rebranding, because that was like German for In a Nutshell. And I think they kind of regretted calling themselves that.
So a little too much of a mouthful, huh?
Yeah, and it's, I don't know, it's, you know, very difficult to try to, it's an unfamiliar word for many English speakers, makes it tough to spell and search for, I would imagine, but, they do make good videos, so I'd recommend checking those out, and the one last week, I don't know if we said, was done by CGP Grey, who is a famous YouTuber himself. So this week we saw the one about the cells, and
again, to get back to the not known biology, it's kind of interesting to look at the, well, just how individual, like, all of your body parts are. Like, if you're changing over that many cells, you're made up of even more.
Like those neuron cells we were talking about just minutes ago. Cells in your body can exist outside your body. At that point, are they still you? One of the questions from the video, which I thought was giving you some mind-blowing stuff there.
Yeah, because your cells can live outside your body, but you cannot live without your cells.
Oh, yes, that's true. Without some of them, you can, I guess. But then, without all of them, no, you cannot do that. I guess it depends which ones we're talking about, too. You know, that makes a big difference.
Well, I think I'd like to live with as many cells as I could.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with
100%. A deletion of any of them, I'm going to guess, is going to cause a problem that I'm not going to be all that comfortable with.
Yeah, I guess, of course, another thing that you could say is, like, you are also, you know, inhabited by these bacteria in your, you know, stomach and whatnot that are, you need to, like, be able to digest food and stuff. But,
right.
You know, that's not you either. Like, I don't know. It was an interesting kind of meditation on identity, what it is that makes you, and the realization that you're kind of made up of all these individual and sometimes competing cells.
And that was kind of the interesting thing, too, that it was, I suppose, a basic about cancer that your own cells turn against you.
Yeah, it's like they decide to not, you know, it is kind of weird because, you know, there are, like, bacteria still that they are the single cell organisms. But for whatever reason, we evolved so that all these different cells are just sort of all sticking together and working together, you know. It is kind of wild to think about that such complexity can come from something that in some ways is so simple, as like a single cell, but even a single cell is made up of all these parts that themselves are kind of complex, so...
because, I mean, I was not surprised that they brought up the mitochondria.
Yeah.
Always something that it's a secondary DNA storage facility.
Once upon a time, it was its own kind of, bacteria or organism, its own, like its own cell. And then somehow, in like a 1 in a million chance, it got stuck inside another cell and was not eaten, entered into like a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, it's like one of those sucker fishes on a larger fish. It's just there to clear the algae off of it.
So, yeah, it kind of lost its cell wall, I guess, and just sort of became like the energy producers for the cell. And basically allowed the kind of multicellular life that we see. It allowed, like, more specialization in cells because they could, use their energy for other things. So it was a pretty big deal in terms of evolution, and it seems like it maybe only happened once. Out of all these billions of years, so...
That's exceedingly rare, obviously.
Yeah.
I guess the video is just really interesting and always worth a watch.
Right. Yeah. It also reminded me of a old Greek story about the ship of Theseus. I don't know if you've ever heard of this one. I'm probably mispronouncing that, but.
Not familiar.
Well, there was this famous ship, and I forget why it was famous. Sorry, Theseus. but it was, you know, kind of like the Santa Maria downtown, right? Like,
well, at least I know why that's famous.
Right, but it's... Okay. So, this was like the real ship of Theseus, right? That they put on display somewhere for people to be able to see. But over time, the ship was, you know, isn't out. It was outside. It was becoming weathered, and like parts would need to be replaced. So like they would fix it up, and it came to be that over time, you know, basically the whole, well, the whole every part had been replaced. At that point, was it still the ship of Theseus, or is it actually no longer?
I would say it's no longer.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, something that people thought about for a while.
I guess you could say that about,
then that would mean once you lose all your cells that you're not you anymore after 7 years.
Oh, right. Well, you're definitely a new you. I wouldn't say you're not you anymore, just because, you don't move out of the body that you're in.
Well, neither does the ship of Theseus in this story, right? I mean, it's never moving. I mean, pieces are being replaced, but it's always staying in the same place.
See where you're going here.
You know, I think that people have said it comes down to, like, what your idea of
self
identity is. Yeah, like, is it, you know, it's really just kind of like an idea that we have, I guess. What is, you know, who you are is something that you, you know, come up with yourself, I guess, you know?
And your brain cells at least keep it intact. In some way, like, even if your brain cells are being replaced.
But they do change, for sure, over time. You are changing over time, even. And it was interesting...
Whether you want to or not.
The other interesting thing from the video that I jumped out at me was that how much your DNA can be different between your different cells in your body. Like, you think... We always were taught that your DNA was identical... at least I remember being taught that.
Right.
Like, every cell in your body had an exact copy of your DNA strand. But that turns out not to be the case, I guess, in recent years they found.
So, oh, okay. I guess maybe I just didn't understand that part then. But I remember them going through that.
Yeah, and they said the part of the cells in your brain are actually the cells that are most... different genetically from each other, out of any cells in the body. So, I guess having diversity in the brain is a good thing for some reason. Probably helps your cells to get along a little bit better.
Support diversity in your brain.
Yeah, you know,
left brain and right brain.
That's diversity right there, yeah.
Yep, there's all kinds of diversity up in there.
And I think that's just the way it works is like, you know, you know, they say opposites attract when you're getting married, you know. Like, it makes some sense to have different outlooks on things. People notice that one partner would notice things differently than another one.
Yeah, it certainly is beneficial. I'm going to throw that one out there.
There's a reason for it.
I think that that may have been a mistake on my part the first time around. Choosing someone who was a little too much... Too likely to agree with me.
Too much like you. Yeah, I guess that is a problem that you don't really think about when you're younger, for sure, I would say. At least I never did.
I would say that was part of the problem. Maybe not the whole problem, but that was part of the problem.
Yeah. I mean, it can be a fine line, I guess, to find someone who's not too dissimilar, I guess, that you're going to...
Well, yeah, and I do think that there needs to be enough common ground that...
it all depends with what you're willing to put up with, I guess, you know? You know, some differences are for sure good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like we're all, you know, bees living in our hive colony together, all just identical drones going about our work. Well, it's not like that, is it, Kevin?
Well, that's interesting that you brought that up, Ken.
Yeah.
Because I will admit that this article that you shared at the last minute, it made some sense, but also did not fill me in quite enough.
Yes.
To what the thinking was. It was saying that in a social setting.
Right. So this is a headline grabber for me.
Yeah, similarities found in bee and mammal social organization.
I did have to reread this one a couple times to actually find the information I was looking
so
for.
So not only did you read this link,
yeah,
you had to read it a couple of times.
So that puts me probably at least in the 20%ers. Someone who had reread the article to fully understand it.
Well, I would imagine that would have helped. I'm just saying, but it's still funny that you said it was a shit article, because that was the impression that I was getting.
Okay, so if you guys are going to skip an article, this is probably a good one.
This is the one not to read.
Allow me to explain my understanding of the article, and then maybe you can decide if that's good enough for you.
Okay.
So, the headline, similarities found in bee and mammal social organization. So bees and mammals seem pretty different, right? One is warm-blooded and doesn't fly. Well, sometimes does. I think people know the difference. This study looked at pieces of the DNA code that dealt with how different proteins are folded in the cells of bees and in mammals. And they found similarities in areas that they saw dealt with. It dealt with how they react to alarm, it sounded like. So, like, in some way that I wasn't clear to me, this really affects how some animals can get along in social groups. Like, they found similarities between the way those cells that we were talking about earlier, Kevin, the proteins that make those cells, how they're folded and shaped. And there are similarities between bees and humans in those areas that they believe are both related to social organization, getting along with other organisms in a society, basically.
Because I don't think that they're saying they match how the organization works. It's just how they relate to each other.
Right. So that's it's at the very, like, cellular level. The differences in, or the similarities in, you know, and I imagine it just must be, like, in how well, you know, I'm in my head, I paraphrase it as, like, basically how freak-outable are the, does this make the individuals of this organism, like, are they going to freak out, or can they, like, work with other organisms? And I'm sure I'm completely massacring this.
But again, there are some articles where I'm like, oh, goddamn, is this thing ever going to end? And I believe that this topic was a little more complex than this kind of summary, in my opinion. Like, there are a lot of layers that I feel like I'm kind of missing out on here.
Yeah.
That could help fill things out for me. Maybe someone who is familiar with the subject has a little easier time.
Well, you know, it's
reading it.
Yeah, it is, I guess, interesting to me that there are, they were able to find some similarities, like, on a cellular level, just because bees and mammals are so, they said, like, their last common ancestor was some kind of legless, worm-like creature, I guess.
Yeah, 600 million years ago.
To find that there are these cellular similarities is interesting, and they may have developed independently, I guess.
Well, I wouldn't say I guess. I mean, they definitely developed independently.
Yeah. And if they're both doing the same thing, I mean, there are certain, I guess, similarities. Like if you look at a, say, beehive or a sky-rise, you know, apartment building with all the little, you know, places where people are living and you know, you could probably see some similarities in the honeycomb patterns or the little compartments that they have for bees to live in. Now, obviously, you know, the bees have a lot less individuality, and the intelligence is that's interesting is arising from those bees. But in some ways, you know, people do the same thing. Like we work together to pool our intelligence as well to kind of produce
things bigger and better things. Than maybe one person could.
So it does, I think, if you look at it a certain way, make sense that there would be similarities there.
Right.
In some ways, because of how they're able to work together, although the individual pieces are very different in their levels of complexity.
Yeah, I would have to say that the bee pattern is a lot less complex than the human pattern.
Yeah, it's like, you know, bees do interesting things in the way that they, you know, I know that people study them and find, and how they're able to, like, find sources of food in these very efficient ways. They've, like, based, you know, algorithms on that to, like, help route to, you know, FedEx trucks and things like that based on how these bees are able to
they are not
find their stuff.
Doing a very good job with the FedEx truck that's supposed to be at my house.
Oh, man. So there might have been a chance he got, you know, busy sniffing flowers or something. I don't know. That doesn't make a lot of sense, but...
And we were talking about bees, so yeah, you could sniff the flowers. Make sure that the bee doesn't sting you.
I guess the idea...
It's trying to pollinate said flower.
I guess the idea would be that they had learned so deeply of the bees and how they find things when they're plotting their... They're using that algorithm when they're plotting their driver's courses, that somehow some essential bee-ness has rubbed off on the drivers... And now that they're trying to go around and, like, sniff flowers and gather pollen, nectar, I guess that was the idea that I was trying to go for with that that joke. And we all know that jokes are much funnier when you try to explain them, so.
Yep, always.
I've succeeded on every level.
Always become funnier. Never a funny part of the show, Ken. The Bell Time Beer of the Week.
Ding, ding.
This week you have supplied us with a company that did not have as much interest in Columbus as a market for their East Coast brewery, but we did go to their opening here in Columbus.
That is right.
The New Belgium Heavy Melon. Watermelon Lime Ale. I've got to admit, a little low on the lime, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Definitely watermelon-y.
Yeah.
Pretty solid. Like, I mean, I would have probably liked this on a warmer day than today.
Yeah, it's definitely a summery beverage. Maybe a little... you know, too sweet for some people's taste. I'm not 100% sold on it. I like the idea of the watermelon beer, but I don't know if I've ever had the perfect one yet. So. I may be still waiting.
Okie dokie. Well, I think that wraps things up for OPA number 70. Oh.
My impeccable timing.
Took it long enough. Took you long enough.
All right, that was bell time
beer. at DeFrango 11, at Gozer 33, for the brand, at Stunt Granny, everybody, have a good night.